I realised this morning that I missed a trick because wait a minute, I'll tell you. Because I thought, you know what? I should have called this Desperate Housewife. But I didn't, so I can't say that. But the focus for our thinking today, and the focus for the scripture passage that we want God to use to speak to us, is this prayer. It's in 1 Samuel chapter 1, verse 12. I'll give you the clue at the bottom. Lord Almighty, if you will only look on your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head. This was a desperate prayer, and that's the topic, the passage, and the subject I've been asked to speak upon. And all the way through, try and remember those words, because that's the heart of what we're thinking about. This is her desperate prayer. Lord Almighty, if you will only look on your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head. But I want to fill out this story so we can sense more deeply why she was so desperate and how this passage might speak to us as well. Because we're not all desperate housewives. But there will have been, or there will be, times in our life when, if we're really honest with ourselves and with God, we have been desperate. Desperate. In bitterness of soul, verse 10 tells us, Hannah wept much. But why? Why was she like this? Well, she had some problems. And the first problem was that she lived in a male-dominated society. And if you don't believe me, ask Angie, because she had to read out that her husband's name was Elkanah, son of Jeroham, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuph, an Ephraimite. He had this long, glorious pedigree. Who do you think I am? That's who I am. A man. His family tree mattered greatly. In contrast, of course, to Hannah. I didn't hear a word about her family tree. Did you miss it out because you got tired? And what about her? The other woman in her life, or in her husband's life, Peninnah, didn't hear anything about her family tree because she lived in a male-dominated society. And here's just a little bit of the evidence. I'm sorry. It was a rough reading to have to... I didn't choose it, so please forgive me. But that was only the beginning of her problems, because her second problem was even more serious, even more challenging. And that is, she was one of two wives. Her husband had two wives. Only two, but he had two. That didn't make for easy living, did it? Imagine that you would have been one of two wives. That's the ladies I'm addressing at this moment. Men, imagine you had two wives. But for her, it was a difficult problem. She had to share her husband. It was cruel. It was harsh. It was reality. But what made her life really, really miserable, what made her truly desperate, was this, that she'd failed to conceive. She didn't have any sons,
not even daughters. She failed to conceive. And what made that harder was that this other wife, Peninnah, had lots of them. And Peninnah knew it and made the most of it. She did everything she could to make Hannah's life a misery. I can't imagine the kind of things she would have said to Hannah. "Ha, you're no good, are you? Where are all your children? Can you hear mine laughing and playing? What about yours?" Every day she was provoked and irritated by this other woman, this other wife. And I'm not sure her husband was a great deal better. He thought he was. Verse 8, Elkanah, her husband, would say to her, "Hannah, why are you weeping? Hannah, why don't you eat? Hannah, why are you downhearted?" It's just the kind of thing a husband might say, but I'm not sure how helpful a desperate wife would feel with those kind of words. And then he ends up by, "Don't I mean more to you than two sons?" Well, yes, but no. Those words don't actually cut the mustard, do they, for a desperate woman who has no children, who's living with this other wife, who's constantly provoking her. She was in a terrible mess. But of course, it's not only people who can't conceive who become desperate. Sometimes people who conceive too easily become desperate because they think, "How am I going to cope with another child? I can't cope with the ones I've got. How am I going to manage financially, emotionally, practically to look after another child? I've had so many pregnancies, I don't want any more." So people can be desperate because they have too many children. And some of us are desperate not so much about the fact we do or don't have children, but if we've had them, we're desperate about our children. Because they seem to get in such a mess so often these days, don't they? Life is so complex. They don't always make it through in the way that we'd long them to, in the way they want to. And so we worry and anguish about our children. Or maybe we are desperate because of false expectations that have been put on us. As we were growing up, our mother, our father, somebody else in the family wanted us to be this, that, or the other. They wanted to achieve. They wanted us to get to university. They wanted us to get a good job. And we didn't make it. And there are many desperate people. But no one was more desperate than Hannah was. But I want you to notice this, that in spite of her complete submersion under this huge weight that made her feel rejected by God, rejected by her husband, rebuked by this other wife, she still went to worship. It would have been a lot easier for her to say to her, "I'm too poorly, just go off with your other wife." But she went. Even though she was confused and depressed, she went to worship God. And she joined in the sacrifices. And she knew, in spite of everything, that God was the Lord Almighty. That's how a prayer begins, isn't it? "O Lord Almighty, if..." And the first thing we need to do if we are desperate for whatever reason is to think about our priorities, to put God first, and to know the kind of God he is, the Lord Almighty for her, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ for us. Whatever's going on in our messed up lives, let's not forget the reality, the basic reality of the universe, that God is God. And our God is the God who loves us endlessly. the God who is for us and not against us, the God from whom nothing can separate us from his love, not even childlessness or too many children or oppression by other people or rejection or our inability to live up to other people's expectation. Nothing can separate us from God's love. And so we come back to that prayer, having now understood the background a bit more deeply, understanding now why she was weeping, why she couldn't eat. She was so down, so desperate. And so she prays, Lord Almighty, if you will only look upon your servant's misery and remember me. But there are other things that kind of emphasize both her desperation and her belief. And the first is her posture. When they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, in the temple, in this very public place, Hannah stood up. Now, normally if you prayed on your knees. Or you prayed with your face down. But Hannah was so desperate, she stood up. She was reaching out to God in a most unusual way. If we were really desperate, we'd perhaps be beside our bed on our knees. We might even be here at the front of the church with our face down, pleading with God. But she expressed her desperation by the way she stood. And then there's her great plea. Lord Almighty, if you will only look upon your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant. You see, in their culture, and this might have been what Elkanah was getting at, it was expected that however you felt as the woman, you would make yourself as attractive as possible. You would hide your tears. You would wear perfume to attract your husband. So when she comes before God, her instinct would be to put on a facade, to make out to God all was well, that she'd been sacrificing with the rest of the family, and it had been a wonderful experience. But Hannah invites God to see her real heart, the reality of what was going on deep, deep within her. Look on your servant in her misery. I don't need to hide it from you, God. I can't hide it anymore. I'm so desperate. Look upon your servant's misery and remember me, and do not forget your servant. Give her a son. I don't know about your doctor, but most doctors these days, when you go to see them and you say, well, I've come about my sore throat, well, I've got bad ears, sorry, one appointment, one issue. Yes? So Hannah says, give me a son. She could have mentioned lots of other things, couldn't she? She could have said, get rid of that other wretched woman who's making my life a misery. Why can't you slay her? Can't you see what a terrible wretch she is? What she's doing to me? She could have said that. She could have prayed, and maybe some of you have prayed this, Lord, give me a more understanding husband. Somebody that can really understand my heart and say the things that will actually help me instead of what they think will help and drawing attention to their own needs. But she got right to the point. Because there was one issue above everything else that mattered to her. give me a son. That's her plea. Not make me happy, but give me a son. Not dissolve all my problems, give me a son. Not lighten my workload. She didn't have a washing machine. She didn't have an oven. She had to do it all by hand. She had to probably go and get the corn, let alone grind it. But she didn't say, give me an easier life. She said, give me a son. She went straight to the point. And I wonder if that's what we do when we come to God. Do we actually get straight to the point? Not only share the fact that we're feeling desperate and miserable, but also saying, Lord, this is what I need above everything else. Because God likes that. And then a promise. You give me a son and I'll give him back to you. Give me that sense that I've been fulfilled by bearing a child. And I'm not going to cling on to that child. I'll recognize that child is yours and I'll give him back to you. And when she said about no razor will ever be used on its head, she wasn't getting it to Gillette or Wilkinson. She was saying, he will be dedicated to you all your life, because that was the sign of a Nazarite, someone who had been dedicated to God. But please notice one other thing. Verse 12. You see, we read verse 11, we read that prayer, and we think, wow, amazing. How honest, how desperate. But she kept on praying to the Lord. As we read it, we might think that was it. But no, she's going on and on and on and on to God. She won't leave that place until she knows God has answered, God has heard, God will do something. And she stood there so long muttering this prayer that Eli thought she was drunk. See, in those days, nobody read a book and thought it. Everybody, if they read anything, would speak it out. It was the same in England until the Elizabethan age. If you could read and not have to speak the words, you were likely to be considered a witch in England, because it's impossible to do. And it was the same in her culture. If you read anything, if you prayed to God, you wouldn't just keep the words to yourself. You'd shout them out. That's why Eli thought she was drunk. And of course, this brings us to another problem she had, and that was with the priests. You ever had a problem with the minister? Wait till I've gone. Or even the elders or the deacons. Sometimes we do. And to be honest, this family worshipping at Shiloh had a few problems with their priests. Hophni and Phinehas were the two sons of Eli. They were kind of in charge. They were doing all the work. And if you read on in this story, you'll find out that they were cheating on God and they were cheating on the people who brought their sacrifices. They lacked integrity. And what about Eli? Well, he obviously misjudges her to start with. But what we have to understand about Eli is he was the priest who was sitting on a chair by the doorposts of the Lord's temple. Why wasn't he at the altar doing the sacrifices? The reason is because he was too old. When Samuel is handed over to Eli in just a few years, we're told he was a very old man. So instead of being at the altar supervising his sons, he had to sit on a chair, a bit like me. He was old. And he sat on this chair at the back of the church, just looking, watching, noticing, trying to do his bit to make sure everything was in order. My wife used to have an elderly aunt, and we knew that she spent most of her day at the window, behind the net curtains, wondering what was going on. That's how Eli was behaving in the temple of God. He was looking for people who might cause trouble. He was no good as a bouncer. He hadn't got the energy and the strength, but he could at least challenge a woman. And so he says, "You're drunk. How long will you keep on getting drunk? Get rid of your wine." Just to add to Hannah's misery. But to give him credit, he does listen. "Not so, my lord," Hannah replied. "I'm a woman who is deeply troubled. I'm a desperate housewife. I've not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord." Pouring out my soul to the Lord. "I've been praying here out of my great anguish and grief." I wonder if you've ever prayed out of great anguish and grief. Not just words, but from the depth of your being, because you were in such a mess, or someone you loved was in such a mess. You could only pray, "Lord Almighty, if you will only look upon your servant's misery and remember me, and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head." And Eli answered, "Go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant what you have asked of him." So old though he was, he could still seek God's blessing for other people. And old as we might be, we can do the same. But how did Hannah respond to all of this? Well, first of all, she received what he said, and it brought her a great sense of relief, and I believe that happened because she now believed God had heard her. She'd prayed and prayed and prayed like that widow in the story that Jesus told, who wouldn't leave the judge alone and who Jesus commended her for the persistence of her prayers. Hannah would not give up till she found some answer. And even through Eli, God spoke to her. And how do I know this? Because then she went her way and ate something, and her face was no longer downcast. Through all of this process, through her crying out to God, through her pleading, through the response of this priest as she withstood his scorn, God spoke. She knew a divine transaction had taken place, or would take place, so she could live a different way. She went on her way and ate something, and her face was no longer downcast. Her time of mourning, of fasting, was over because God had heard. And that changes everything. And then the miracle. After all these years of mocking and of failure, she conceived and she bore a child. And she dedicated him by calling him Samuel, which means "I asked the Lord for him." And she completed her vow, as the rest of the story goes on to tell us. And how had God responded? Well, he had remembered her. Sometimes we feel he doesn't, but he does. Please do not listen to the enemy's life when he tells us your prayers are of no use. "I prayed for my son with his long COVID for nearly 3 years. I will not stop." because God will hear and God will answer. Don't believe the enemy's lie. Keep going until God gives you the assurance, however it might come, that he's heard and he will change things for you and those you love. And what happened? Well, God used this son. This son for whom this woman had waited so long, had pleaded with God, had put up with provocation from the other woman. God used this son in an amazing way to prepare for the coming of the kings who would lead his people through the next stage of their journey. And as with the story of Ruth, so with this story, God might say, you live in a male-dominated society, or you live in a society dominated by young people, or whatever it might be that you feel. But God chooses ordinary people. God chooses those whom the world thinks are of no significance. And it might not be you that he appears to use greatly, but he will use your faithfulness greatly through someone else. So God gave her this son. She called him Samuel because I asked of the Lord for him. And God not only remembered her, he remembered her promise. Because she kept it, he could do amazing things. So what's our response going to be? Well, first of all, I don't want you to be like the other woman. Don't provoke other people. Don't somehow gloat over your benefits and their disadvantages. Don't gloat over your abilities and their lack of it. Because even if we don't speak words, our feelings can hurt and provoke other people. We might never intend to do so, but we need to keep clean hearts before God so that we don't damage others as we share their journey. Do be honest with God. Really, really let him know the things that hurt you, that twist you, that destroy you, that sap your faith. Be honest with him. One of the things that's been lacking in our worship over many years, I think, is lament. If you read the Psalms, you'll find there that people are really honest with God, and we can be that honest with God too. Be honest with God. Don't misjudge others. They might look as though they're drunk to you, but maybe they're praying. They might look as though they're not involved in worship as much as you'd like them to be, but maybe their hearts are, and maybe it's costing them a lot just to be here. Don't misjudge others. If you make a commitment to God, keep it, because he will use it. When my second son, who's now, I think, 47, was 14 or 15, he was involved in an accident playing rugby. He was taken from the rugby pitch eventually to the hospital. They examined him. They said, you've twisted your neck a bit. They gave him a soft collar and they sent him home with the instructions to do neck exercises. But something inside me said, no, don't let him. So I forbade him to do those neck exercises. Because it was a Saturday when he was x-rayed, he had to go back to the hospital on the Monday to see a consultant. Well, I dropped him and my wife at the hospital and went off to do some other things. When I came back, I was utterly shocked. Because as soon as the consultant had read the x-rays, they immobilized him. Because he was within inches of fracturing his spinal cord at the second vertebrae. And if that had happened, he would have been completely paralyzed. And when I saw him, got over the shock and heard the story. I said in my heart, thank you, God. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do. And then many years later, as I'd been at Queen's Road for 12 years, God's moved in my life and I felt he was calling me to do something else, to serve him in some area of evangelism. And the opportunity came to apply for the job of evangelism secretary. That was a sort of coordinator for all the evangelists, etc., that were associated with EA. And it was based in Leicester, because one of the things I'd said to God was, never send me to London. I couldn't bear it. So I applied for the job because it was Leicester. But by the time I was appointed, they'd closed the Leicester office. And it was based in Leicester. And if I'm honest, I said to God, that's not fair. How could you do such a thing? You can't expect me to work from London. And God brought back to me those words. Whatever you ask me to do, I will do it. And so I say to you, if you've made a commitment, however long ago it was, and God brings it to mind, fulfill it. Because God is not out to get us, but to build us and to glorify his name and further his kingdom. And isn't that what we all want? To be part of his ongoing developing kingdom. So if you've made a commitment, whenever you made it, however long ago, whether it was yesterday or 10 years ago, if God calls it to mind, honor it, live it, because God will bless you and bless others through you. So here is a woman with a desperate prayer. O Lord Almighty, if you will only look upon your servant's misery and remember me, and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head. A desperate prayer from a desperate woman to a great, glorious, faithful, and loving God. Amen.